The Primadier, session number 577. Hello, and welcome to The Primadiers, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Well, welcome to The Primadiers. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a great guest, Yvonne, who's going to share her journey to medical school and overcoming some health issues that she talks about in the beginning of our episode today. All right, let's go ahead and say hello to Yvonne right now. Yvonne, welcome to The Primadiers. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you. Let's start with my favorite question, my only first question. When did you first realize you wanted to be a doctor?
So I think I first realized, I don't think there was like a light bulb moment for me where I was like, I want to do this. But when I was a sophomore in high school, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And so that was kind of the first exposure I had to the medical field. Like no one in my family had previously been involved in healthcare in any way. And so I think just being a patient and getting to see like how procedures were done on me, obviously, but I think it was just really cool. And my curiosity just began to grow the more I was like in the hospital and exposed to that environment.
Yeah. Were you interested in healthcare before that or no? You think that was kind of the start of it all?
I have no idea what I wanted to do.
Okay. All right. So, you became a crony. That's the start of it all. I have a lot of IBD people in my family, so lots of cronies and UCers and all that fun stuff. So you're going down this path. You said it sounds like you didn't have any family that were in healthcare to expose you to this. When you're going through this, and you mentioned high school, correct?
Yes.
And you're like, okay, this is kind of interesting, right? I'm this patient now, and there are these people doing things and whatever. What was that first step for you to start to explore?
I honestly don't remember like there being like a very like initial step. I think one thing that really stood out to me, like, was when I got my first CT scan. I think that was like it was just a cool experience because before that, all the doctor's appointments I had been to were just like checkups and it was just kind of like, come in, get your vaccines, get a sticker and leave. Whereas this was more so just like, you know, they had me drink this contrast and I walk into this room and there's this giant weird machine and they push all these things through that, through an IV, and they're like, this one's gonna make you feel like this, this one's gonna make you feel like you have to pee.
One of them makes you feel like you have to pee. It's so weird. I hate that.
It's the weirdest feeling. And I just laid there and I was like, wow, they're right. Like this, it was just so fascinating. And I just thought it was just so cool how, I don't know, I think that was just like kind of a cool experience for me because it was so different than anything else I had seen like in a hospital setting. And I think just procedures like that just made me really interested in the field.
Yeah. Were you nerding out as a science person before that or was science not really super interesting?
Absolutely not. I think it was a weird, it was a shift for me for sure. Before I knew what I wanted to do, I was like not a good student by any means. In high school, I remember I finished my freshman year with like a 2.7 GPA. Like I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't really care about anything. And so after my diagnosis, it was kind of like, I was like, okay, if I want to go to medical school, like I need to get my stuff together. So yeah.
Okay. So you, had to pick where you wanted to go to college. How did you figure that out in terms of where you wanted to go to college, what you were going to major in, all that kind of good stuff?
Honestly, going to college, I wish I put more effort into like the college application process. But I literally just went to my state school because that was like what ended up being cheapest. Well, actually I went to a private school that was like really close to my house. And then I ended up transferring first semester to just like my state school, but I stayed in Nebraska the whole time. But yeah, I kind of wish I put more thought into like the whole college application process.
Why? What do you mean by that? Like what happened because you didn't put more thought into it?
It's feel like I just didn't apply broadly at all. I think I went to like 3 or 4 schools, and I don't know. I think in high school I just really was very uncertain of what I wanted to do, and even choosing a major, I just chose biology because I was like, that's like the most generic pre-med major. I don't even know what else I would do. So I just don't think I put a lot of thought into the process. I think it worked out fine, but going back, I wish I gave myself more options, I guess.
Okay. Were you exploring like the pre-health office and what kind of support they were going to give you, or did you not kind of get that far down your thought process?
Yeah, no, I didn't really do any of that.
just winging it. But you made it work. So that's good. When you ended up on campus, you mentioned kind of struggling earlier during high school as a student. Were you able to kind of, knowing what your end goal was, were you able to kind of maintain good grades and be a good student at that point in college?
Yeah, I think I ended up doing better like after like my junior senior year, like later on in high school. And then going into college, I had like this like raging sense of imposter syndrome that I'm going to fail, because I always just kind of like labeled myself as like, I'm just this dumb kid. And like, everyone thinks I'm dumb. Everyone thinks like, it's just like this giant joke that I even want to do medicine. Like, I didn't even want to say it out loud. Because like, I don't know. I think it's just like growing up in like this community with higher standards too. Like, I don't think anyone took it seriously that I was doing this. And so I just try to keep it on the down low. And then in college, like freshman year, I went in and I was like so, so scared to fail. Like, I remember I just lived at the library my first semester, like 7 hours a day, just studying for no reason. Like, sometimes I just didn't even have an exam. I just like felt like I needed to study because I had to do everything I could to not fail. And I think it ended up, it worked, but I think it was definitely overboard. But I think it helped me like build study strategies that were helped me to be successful later on in college.
Yeah. What was the hardest thing about being a pre-med student?
I think it was honestly just juggling responsibilities, because it's a lot of, you know, you have to do well in your classes, you have to get clinical experience, especially being like kind of like a first gen pre-med. No one in my family had any connections, so I had to go try to build them myself and figure out like what the heck I was doing.
Yeah, there's lots to juggle. When you were looking at kind of this big picture, again, you mentioned first gen pre-med student going to medical school, there's a lot of things that one needs to do, both for confirmatory practices for you, right? Confirming that you want to be a physician, obviously getting good grades, all that kind of good stuff. How were you getting information about what to be doing? Because I think a lot of students just aren't aware of the process and maybe aren't asking the right questions and the right people to figure out what to do. How were you getting your information on all of these things that you should be doing, including prereqs and this little thing called the MCAT and clinical experiences and all that?
Honestly, it's probably not the best source of information, but I got a lot of it from social media and like watching people like you and watching your podcast and just seeing what other people did. And then also just speaking to kind of, I didn't have like connections in my immediate family, but like any family friends or even my own doctors, I would ask them to kind of shadow them and just kind of like getting my feet wet and getting like building connections that way.
Yeah. How is the asking your own doctors to shadow? Because I think a lot of students are really scared to ask their own doctors.
Okay, honestly, like I felt awkward. I didn't even know it was an option until I literally went to an appointment with like my GI doctor, and he was like, "Oh, if you ever like, you know, if you ever want to shadow me," like he like offered. I was like, "Oh, like I didn't even think that like against some rule or something." Like, they're super open to having you, like they're super open to teaching. For the most part, like every doctor I've shadowed has been super like happy to have students. And so I would definitely say, like, if you have the option of shadowing your own doctors, I think it's a really easy way to like get into like shadowing and clinical experience.
Yeah. When it comes to imposter syndrome, you mentioned, right? I think that's something that we all deal with and never goes away, unfortunately. One of the biggest pieces of imposter syndrome is just that end of the road of applying to medical school. Like, I'm doing all of this stuff, I'm studying all of this, all of these things, and getting my extracurricular activities and whatever. Yeah. And I don't even know if I'm good enough to get in. Like, how do you deal with that kind of constant, in my words, right, dread of like the unknown of not even knowing if you're going to get into med school? And are you good enough? And are you doing enough? Are your grades good enough? Is your MCAT score going to be good enough? How did you deal with all that?
Honestly, it was really, really hard. I don't think I was the best at dealing with it, but just knowing that, like, I don't know, this sounds stupid, but I feel like honestly, just knowing that you put everything that you can into it, and like at some point, it's like you've done everything that you could. And I ended up actually taking, I wasn't intending to take a gap year, and then I realized like I wasn't ready. And then so this extra year, I really just took all the time to like, you know, make sure I was like bridging any gaps in my application, like getting clinical experience where I needed it, or, you know, getting my MCAT score up, and just realizing, like, looking back and like realizing how much I have done to like get to this point, and just like putting your best foot forward. I don't know. At some point, it's just like, I've done what I can do, and I'm just going to apply and go for it and like shoot my shot.
Yeah. Let's talk about the gap year decision, because I think that's such a big point of conversation nowadays is everyone thinks they have to take a gap year because 66% of students are taking gap years roughly. And so there's this common just thought of like, oh, taking a gap year must be needed or good because everyone's doing it, which isn't the case. But for you, what was the decision for taking that gap year, thinking that you weren't ready?
So I feel like this is a very typical like pre-med gunner mindset, but I was like, I don't need a gap year. Like, I just want to go to medical school. I don't need time off. I'm not burnt out. Like, I just want to go straight through. And I had like all my eggs in one basket. Like, I knew that this is what I wanted to do, even like if I had gone straight through. But the main factor for me was my MCAT score wasn't like, I took it in, or I was going to take it over the summer, and then it just like wasn't where I wanted it to be. So I knew that it wasn't competitive enough, so I ended up taking an extra year.
The summer before the application cycle, or yeah, the summer so, during?
Summer, like after my junior year.
Oh, okay. So when you would have been applying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty late, like for when I would have been applying in the first place.
Okay.
And my score wasn't where I wanted it. And looking back, I'm actually really glad that happened, and like I had to retake, because even like going through the application cycle after I had taken a gap year, I was like running dry, especially when it came to secondaries.
Yeah.
I was like running so dry on like experiences to talk about. And I know that if I had gone straight through, I would have had like literally nothing left to say. So I'm really glad that like having a low MCAT score kind of like forced me to take this extra time to like build up my application in other aspects too.
Yeah. How did you know your MCAT score was too low or not where you wanted it to be?
I don't know. I kind of set like a 5'10 cutoff in my head, and I was like, anything lower than that, I'm going to retake.
Okay.
Because I also felt like during my test, I got like extremely, extremely nervous the first time. And like, I have really bad test anxiety. And so I felt like it definitely wasn't my best work. I remember during the bio section, I was literally sitting there like borderline, like having a panic attack. I was like, I remember we were wearing like these giant headphones, and all I could hear was like my heart just like,
those things are horrible.
And so I just knew like it wasn't my best work. Even like walking out of the testing center, I was like, I should have avoided that test. And so I wanted to make sure that I could at least like do the best that I could on that test before applying.
Yeah. Okay. So you get your score back and you're like, let's pause. I'm assuming you were kind of going down the application process already because you took the MCAT a little bit later. Yeah. What was that thought process or at least from a kind of a mentality standpoint of like, oh, like I'm giving up on the application cycle. So many students would just push forward and go, I'm doing it anyway. The whole sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, no, it was hard, especially like you said, everything else was ready. You know, all my activities, I was like drafting them, my personal statement, I had been working on it for like 6 months at this point. And I got all my letters of rec ready to go, like literally everything else was set except for the MCAT. And so it was hard just because I was so mentally prepared to like put everything into it. But also just like, while I was watching your videos and watching other people go through the application cycle, I realized like how much it really does like cost and how like how much really does go into it, both like with like mental energy and like financial costs and everything like that. And so it was a process I only wanted to do one time. And going in with that score, I knew that it wasn't going to be like the best that I could make it. And I wanted to make sure I was putting my best foot forward.
Yeah, no, it's a great decision. So when you ended up taking your gap year, let's talk about how that conversation went with your parents, because not a lot of parents are on board with gap years. Did you have any struggle with that conversation?
No, my parents are like the most supportive people ever. It's nice because they know absolutely nothing about
the ignorance is bliss, right? That there's a saying. It's so true.
I mean, sometimes they have these random like suggestions, but they don't have any like super pressing opinions. Like, you need to do this, you need to do that. They're very much like, just like super supportive. They're like, whatever direction you go, like, it's okay. You know, we'll be here to support you. So, my parents have never been like, it's never been difficult at all.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
When you were in your gap year, how did you figure out what you wanted to be doing?
Okay. Honestly, this was like the most spontaneous year of my life because like it was unplanned. And I feel like, especially as a pre-med, you have everything planned like to the minute, you know, it's like, and so it was just very much like, because I never planned to take a gap year, I was like, oh my gosh, like, what do I do with my life? And so after I made that decision, my younger sister goes to college in UCSD. And I'm like from Nebraska. And so I was like, I had this random idea. I was like, what if I just moved to California for a year? And then we went back and forth on it for like so long. And then eventually
Was it really that hard of a decision? Like, do I want to be with corn or beach? I don't know.
I was like, I mean, I might as well. Like, there's nothing here. But it was just like a big move. And so I was I don't know. And I just kept going back and forth. I'm super like lazy. I don't know. I was like, moving is like a lot of work. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then eventually I went back and forth on it for so long. And then I ended up moving here. And so I feel like it's been so cool. Like, I would say if you are taking a gap year and you weren't planning on it, like, go branch out, go do something that you otherwise like would never have time to do. Because looking back, like, I'm really, really grateful for this year.
Yeah.
Either way, just because it gave me the chance to experience something that I otherwise like would not have had time for.
Yeah. So besides the beach, obviously, which is fantastic, what did you fill your time with? Did you I have to do clinical, I have to do research? Like, how did you decide what to fill your time with?
So most of the time my main job during my gap year, I worked as a behavior therapist.
Okay.
So I worked with kids who have autism and, just like help them. They had different goals that they wanted to reach or like different habits they wanted to work on. Which was really cool. I think I've never had experience working with like a neurodivergent population.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a typical like MA or like scribe, like clinical job that I had done before. So I thought it was like a really unique experience.
Yeah. Lots of students are concerned about that being clinical experience. Did you get any pushback from anyone saying, why are you calling this clinical experience?
I personally didn't call it clinical experience. Ooh, just because I didn't really put it on my application because like this was after I had submitted everything and after I had done like all my secondaries. So
okay.
It wasn't super relevant. I talked about it when I was writing update letters, but that was pretty much it. But I didn't like, I guess like when you're writing update letters, you don't really have to like put it in a category of like clinical or non-clinical. So I did talk about it in interviews and like later on, but for primaries and secondaries, it wasn't even on my application. So
got it.
I wasn't super focused on like categorizing it.
Okay. So what else were you up to?
I also volunteered at a colorectal surgery clinic, which was really cool.
Okay. So super relevant, obviously, for you and your experiences. When it came to actually putting together an application, we were kind of talking before we hit record and just talking about the whole standing out in an application process. Talk about your kind of thought process arc through that, through kind of how you presented yourself in your application.
Yeah. So like I was saying earlier, I think I'm like the most generic person. I'm like the most average person on earth. Like, I always told myself, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get in because there's like a million other people like me. And I was trying to kind of make myself stand out because I had a very traditional like application. You know, I took all the prereqs, and I 4 years of undergrad, one gap year, applied one cycle, got in. I don't have any, you know, I didn't cure cancer. I didn't do anything like drastically crazy. And like, I just was so focused on trying to make myself like stand out, I guess. And after I was like listening to your podcast, and I watched a lot of people, like I watched a lot of like application renovation videos. I thought that those were really helpful. But I realized, oh, you put a lot of emphasis on like not trying to stand out and just kind of like being yourself. And I think that took a lot of pressure off of me when I just took a step back and I was like, okay, I just need to be myself. I'll just like write out what I did. Yeah. And you know, I've done a lot of things that, you know, they're not anything like super spectacular, but I did them and I'm going to write about them and write about what I learned from them. And I think it really just changed my mindset a lot going into the cycle.
Yeah. How many interviews did you end up getting?
I only got one.
Okay.
One interview, one acceptance.
One interview, one acceptance. All it takes. Love it. Okay. So when you got that first interview, what was that like?
It was so good. Like this was after like I had written, I applied to like 48 schools.
Wait a minute. 48 schools. Why are you applying to so many schools?
I just really, like I was saying earlier, I really just, this was a process I only wanted to do one time. And I was just so scared of not, looking back, it was definitely overboard. I don't think I would go back and apply to that many. But I just like, I was like, I don't want to do this ever again. Like, I just want to do it once and get in once and just like give myself like the most opportunity that I possibly can to like get an acceptance. But yeah, so that was after, I got my first interview in like mid to late July. So it was pretty early on in the cycle, but it was really nice. I feel like it was good to have that validation after just like getting through so many secondaries. And like, I just felt like it was like a one-ended, like one-sided conversation. You know, I was like, I'm like pouring out everything I have. And like, I don't know if I'm going to hear from them for like, you know, months. And so it was really nice.
Just, if
like,
ever.
Really on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. 48 schools, you said?
Yeah.
48 schools, only one interview invite. What if I were to take a look at your application, what do you think I would pick apart to say, oh, here's why you didn't get more traction at other schools?
I'm not sure. It could have been like something in my writing, maybe, or I had a really low MCAT CAR score. So I don't know if that was like, if some schools have certain cutoffs, it wasn't something that I like paid attention to because I was like, it is what it is. And I'm just going to shoot my shot anyway.
How low was it?
So I had a 122 and I had a 512 overall. So I feel like I wasn't sure if that was like, could be a reason that I was getting filtered out initially by schools.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I only know of one school that has a published cutoff. That's Emory. They have anything less than a 124. I'm sure there are other schools that have published cutoffs and then obviously internal unpublished cutoffs for that CAR score. But overall, your MCAT score was solid. So that was good. What was it about CARs? Because to me, the fact that you're getting, let's see, basically 130s on the other sections, right? And then a 122 is how the math works, if I'm mathing correctly very quickly. To me, is that right? What was your section scores?
So I had 131 chem phys, 122 cars, 130 biochem, 129 psych soc.
Yeah, so 130s on all of them, average, right? The to me, you're able to MCAT the MCAT, right? It's all about just understanding how they're writing their questions, their passages, all of that stuff. But you had some sort of mental block on CARs. What was going on there?
I honestly don't know. I knew it was going to be really hard for me. Like historically speaking, I've always struggled with like that type of reading. Obviously like the MCAT has a lot of reading, but it's like a very specific type of reading to where like you can't use any outside knowledge. You know, everything is like given to you in the passage. And I just had such hard time like with that. I was like, no matter what I did, I felt like I couldn't improve because there, like every passage was so different, and yeah. I like could not get a grip on it. I also like really struggled with like the ACT reading section. I remember I took the ACT 7 times, just like I couldn't get the reading section down. It was always the same.
So nothing new there. Okay.
Well, I think like, I don't know, history repeats itself. I just like could not do cars. I literally tried everything. I think I spent more time studying for cars than like all my other sections combined. I tried like private tutoring. And then on my retake, my score actually went down a point. Like on my first attempt, I actually got a 123, and then somehow I went down to a 122. So I don't know what it was, there's nothing else I can do about it.
Yeah. And that's the hard part, right? And I think there's so much, the car section is so much a mental game of just going into that section and then forgetting all of your past experiences with cars and all of your past experiences with struggling with the ACT, and just go, you know what? It's like, excuse this analogy, I've never used it before, but it's just like you're sitting down in a public restroom and there happens to be some random reading material there, and you're like, I'm interested, I'm just going to read some random stuff, right? And you just have to go in interested.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. So
yeah, but some people I feel like are just naturally, it's one of those things. I mean, you can definitely improve. I'm not trying to like discourage anyone that you can't improve in cars. But I feel like a lot of my friends that were like good at cars, they like started off good at cars. Yeah. And then like, I feel like it's a very, you have more of like this natural, like it's, I think it's harder to improve.
I think it's harder to improve because it's not knowledge that you're learning, right? It's, yeah. For me, again, it's a game. I think a lot of students psych themselves out for cars, right? The fact that you are getting on average 130 on the other sections tells me that you know how to read the passages. You know how to understand the questions that the test writers are answering, but you have convinced yourself you're bad at cars.
Yeah.
And therefore you're bad at cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this random game. But anyway, you got the one interview. You got the one car section. Oh well. Did the car section come up at all during your interview?
No, but I think they did give me a chance to like bring up like, do you have any like red flags on your application? Like they did ask that question. I tried to bring it up. I don't think I did the best job of like explaining it, but I wanted to, I don't know if it was like the right move to address it, but I wanted to like at least acknowledge, like I'm aware that it's like there, they're going to see it anyway. And just kind of show like, okay, it's different than the other sections, and like going forward, I need to make sure that like I'm giving it, like I'm like changing my study strategies when I need to, just kind of like reflecting on where I went wrong and like what I can do differently going forward.
Yeah.
But they didn't ask about it unless like I was the one that brought it up.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So it didn't come up. You brought it up. How long did you have to wait to get that acceptance?
Actually, I got the acceptance on the first day that they were giving them. Like,
so October 15th is always kind of.
Yeah. I think I got it. So they said that we would be hearing back in between December 22nd and March 22nd.
Oh, much later. Okay.
Yeah. So they gave us like that specific time frame. And so I knew I was going to have to wait until at least December. So I like wasn't worrying about it for a couple months. And then like the morning of like 5 a.m. December 22nd, I got an email, and I was like, they said like this decision. I was like, well, it's either like immediately yes or like immediately no. Like they're really going to reject me on like the very first day. So yeah.
Yeah. Who was the first person you told?
Honestly, it was like, so it was 5 a.m. I was like, no one's even up. Like, tell? Like, I don't even know. I didn't even know what to do with myself. I just kind of like sat there. I wanted to tell my parents, but this was right before I was going home for Christmas. And so I waited a couple days to like, I wanted to tell them in person.
Okay.
So I actually like held off. So I was like texting all my friends and I told them, but, I forced myself to wait a couple days just like to go home and like tell my parents in person. I made my sister, like they sent like this thing in the mail, and I made my sister like go grab it so like they wouldn't see it in time. It was a whole process.
That's awesome. How did they take it?
It was good. They were really excited. They were like, oh no way. Like they thought that I would get in. Like, they, I feel like they had a lot of confidence in me, but they just didn't think it was going to be that early. So they were really excited.
That's awesome. When you kind of look back at this whole journey, what's something you would change besides your college admissions or application process?
I feel like I would try to like chill out a little bit. Like, there was just times where I feel like I just became so like OCD with like studying 24/7, especially freshman year. I feel like I like didn't let myself go out and do anything. Like, especially when I was studying for the MCAT, somebody would ask me to go out to lunch for like an hour. I was like, no, I'm studying for the MCAT. Like, no. And so it's a lot of like, I wish I had done more. I feel like I didn't get a lot of like the typical college experience because, partially because of COVID, but also just because like I did that to myself and I said no to like a lot of things just because I felt guilty because I wasn't studying all the time.
Yeah.
And also I wish I had done more to like get clinical experience earlier on. I feel like a lot of my clinical experience was like later in undergrad. And then COVID hit like second semester of my freshman year. And so it became harder to like seek out experiences.
Yeah. Okay. But at the end of the day, you made it. You're into medical school. You'll be starting in just a couple months as we're recording this. What are you looking forward to the most? And on the flip side, what are you worried about the most in terms of medical school?
I'm looking forward to like going, honestly, just going back to school. Like, I love school and like I miss school. I miss like taking exams and like getting grades and like, I don't know. It's just, it's been
nerd.
Yeah, I'm a nerd and like I miss like learning and like having like more structure in my routine. I feel like over this gap year, it's been so nice, but like I'm going a little bit insane, just like not having like structure and routine. And so I'm really excited to like get back into it. And I'm honestly also, that's like what I'm most nervous for is like medical school. Like it just seems very like you hear so many horror stories and like how hard it is and how like you're studying 24/7. I think I just like, as it gets closer, the imposter syndrome is like really kicking in and I'm just getting nervous about like being able to handle it academically.
Yeah. Obviously you have personal connections to GI, colorectal surgery. You, were shadowing, hanging out with. What specialty do you think you're interested in at this point?
So I thought about doing GI. I was like, it might be cool, you know, cause it was like my first, I was like, cause like the connections, but I don't think I'm super interested in it from like shadowing. It's not completely off the table. Like walking into medical school, like I don't have enough experience to say anything's like, oh, I don't want to do this. But I think as of right now, maybe either like neuro or like peds, like something related to peds. Cause I've always really liked working with kids. So maybe something with that.
Awesome. For everyone listening, as we wrap up here, for those students dealing with their own imposter syndrome on this journey, what final words of wisdom do you have for them to keep going and to enjoy the journey?
I think one thing looking back is like everything seems so much bigger when you're in it. Like everything seems so difficult. Like I would fail a chemistry exam and then just be like, not okay. Like I would just like lock myself in my room for like a week and just like cry over it. Like everything seems so much bigger when you're in it, but then looking back, it's like literally nothing. A lot of it is just like you do your best and then things like work themselves out. That applies to like even bigger things like the MCAT, like applying to med school. Like everything just seems so stressful in the moment, but a lot of times, like if I were to go back, I would tell myself like literally just take a chill pill. Like it's not that serious. Just do your best and like it will work itself out.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Yvonne talking about her journey to medical school. I hope this was helpful. I hope it encouraged you. If you're dealing with your own health issues and worried about getting through your pre-med years or getting into medical school and all of that fun stuff, hopefully that conversation today or this conversation today will help you and hopefully encourage you and give you some motivation to keep pushing forward. And if you're looking for some one-on-one help with our expert advisors, check out medicalschoolhq.net today. Use the promo code PMY to save some money on our advising. Again, that's medicalschoolhq.net. and PMY for a discount. We help with interviews and essays and the whole application process if you're looking for that. If you're an earlier pre-med, we have the pre-med pathway to help you through your freshman, sophomore, junior years. If you're applying early assurance, we can help you with that. Anything you need, we're there. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.